Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community. Our platform is designed to change minds. And that's one of our slogans now. The platform is designed to change minds because we are really in need of a mind change. Okay, folks, this evening I would like to introduce the panel. I'm going to introduce myself. And then I'm introduced the guests. To our left here, we got Professor Amin-Raz, our master teacher on the platform. We got Sister Aziza. She's been back for the past three shows. Glad to see her back. Got Brother Mashinda, and we got Brother Henry, all here to welcome our guest this evening. Our guest is Brother Muko, out of Baltimore. And Brother Muko has been on our show numerous times, maybe about five or six times, and he's also a member of the Community Education Network. He's one of our team members. And I didn't introduce myself. I'm Roski Mascani. I'm the host. So we're going to get started here this evening. Brother Muko always have interesting conversation for us, information, and all of that. So, Brother Muko, we're not going to wait. We're going to get it going. Welcome back, brother. Break it down for us.
Hey, what's going on, K Unit? How y'all
All
feeling tonight?
right.
It's always somebody giving me a call. As soon as I get into something like this, excuse me. Can y'all see me? Everybody can hear me? Okay. All right. Well, a nice topic. It's kind of about everything, you know. Medical warfare, of course. Then a thing called race correction. I don't know if anybody in the crowd ever heard of race correction. I know I never heard of it. Has anybody? I know we got some, you know, professionals in the building. Has anybody heard of anything called race correction before, as far as dealing with medicine?
No, sir.
Not me.
Okay.
You put
Well,
me on point, Luco.
say that again. I said
I said you know, I read the title and I read a little bit about it. I had never heard of it either. And I think this should be pretty interesting.
okay. Well, yeah, I haven't heard. I when the first time I heard about it was actually I heard a news clipping from a platform that I think we all familiar with, the Cows, the host Gus T. Renegade, and just found it pretty interesting. I looked into it a little bit, and it was just real alarming to me what I found, but it definitely went along the guidelines of medical warfare. And all I mean when I say medical warfare is racism practice and the form of medicine or, healthcare, as we, got my quotation fingers up as we know it. But I just wanted to get into ask a few questions to the group, kind of to start the, to start the conversation going on. Has anybody ever experienced racism in the medical in the medical field, either being a patient or, being employed in the medical field?
Yeah.
Okay.
Visit to the hospital. And I noticed that they kept taking patients before me. And it was some people in there that I grew up in the neighborhood with, they could pass. They were that light. And so I started raising hell in the waiting room as to why everyone was passing me by. So they called for security, and the security was one of my former football players. He was like, "Coach, what's up?" I said, "I'm going off in there, right? So he
Yeah.
calmed down, and so they finally took me. So when I got to see the doctor, first thing I noticed was that Indian thing in the forehead. And I was like, oh, that's what's happening. I'm one of the untouchables. They ain't supposed to be touching me. That's the cultural thing in India. And so I told the doctor, I said, you think you ain't touched me, but the people that was before me are passed, and I've been knowing them, you know, growing up in the neighborhood. They lived around the corner. So that was my experience with that. I just want to put that out there. But I had a neighbor who he worked 50 years and never missed a day. His name is Sam Carey. He was a few doors down. He worked for Douglas Aircraft. So I finally got him to retire, and he was developing diabetes. So I told him, man, start walking. Walking. So anyway, trying to find out he was sick. They found a massive... They found a massive growth on his lung. And he doesn't smoke, never smoked in his life or nothing, you know. I'm like, man, how are you having these checkups and they not notice that, and it's massive now? I said, what kind of doctor you got? Sure enough, somebody from India. So just want to lay that out there. And I don't know if brothers and sisters are aware, but there are approximately 150 million Dravidians down in southern India right now, and you know that was one of the colonies of, you know, Northeast Africa way back in ancient times. A lot of the rivers and whatnot are named after African generals, like Ganges and all that. But anyway, that was my experience. I don't want to take up all the time, but let somebody else chime in.
Nah, that was definitely interesting and definitely goes right along with the topic. Wow, that was interesting. Very valuable.
I think Professor Rob, you gotta unmute, Rob. You experienced
I've experienced and seen it in a number of areas. First started just our education. Many black people are taught not to go into the sciences or take the math or the qualifying classes to get into or to have a desire to go into the medical field. Most black people that do go go to HBCUs because of the difficulty of admission and requirement. Even in nursing, as a community college counselor, they make it so difficult to become a nurse. And, you know, now they're trying to switch all nurses to RNs. They used to have vocational nursing. Then it's so difficult to become an RN. You have to take a lot of classes. And then you had to take a state exam, which white folks grade. And that's discouraging. And then when you finish dealing with that in the schools, the discouragement, the lack of black faculty that had the similar experiences to communicate in your cultural realm. And most, even in examination and testing and studies, in Guthrie's book, even the rats were white. He said most of the examinations and lab tests on diseases and things are done with white rats because it's designed to deal with white people, you know. And that's William Guthrie in his book, Even the Wrath of Life. Second, lack of black doctors in hospital, period. You know, and the lack of doctor black facilities. I think one time we had in this country 12 hospitals that that were black. But now you don't have but one, and that's at Howard University. The field, I mean, we have some good black doctors that are specialists, you know, brain, heart, you know, and certain things, but they super doctors. You understand? They generally be the directors of their division because they're so sharp. So race, it's hard not to have, I think as Rasha Key always bring up Neely Fuller and Francis Chris Wilson, racism is in everything. So why wouldn't it be in medical? You know, Charles Drew is just now opening up their hospital to start doing a joint medical degree with one HBCU. And they're trying to, that's out here in California. But the point is that when you're in a racist society, the issue is that many African Americans in this country, many of them, not all of them, think that they're not a victim of racism. They have normalized racism. You know, even when the people are disrespecting them, if you don't know, like Joe was a teacher, educated, Brother Hembrick, and he know what good treatment is and bad. When you've been treated bad from the beginning, in every aspect of society, you go to the hospital, you get treated bad, you act like it ain't normal. I mean, you act like, what? I mean, like it's normal. You know, this is the way everybody's supposed to get treated. There's a few people that do speak up. But racism is throughout the medical field, and because you have them designing drugs that have negative, more side effects on us than they do on them. And the key to this, they put so much money into research for diseases that affect and morbidities that affect white folks than they do for black. And we had one major disease that they used to focus on, sickle cell anemia. And to this day, they have not. Lou Rawls used to have a marathon, you know, and raise money. And then, but then all of a sudden now it's on the back burner. And some people are still being affected by it. And I may think of some other things later.
I have an interesting story. This was back maybe about 30 years ago, over 30 years ago, when they had the big, the AIDS epidemic, and they was encouraging everybody to go take an AIDS test. And so I went to, back then I didn't have medical insurance or anything, so I went to a clinic to go get an AIDS test. And they had this old white lady back in the back that was in, you know, putting that needle in people. And it just happened to be a black lady there with her. And the white lady was going to treat me. But the black lady said, oh, no, I'll take him. And so what I took from that is that maybe they were injecting people with the virus, with the AIDS virus. And that black lady said, no, we're not going to. So I think I was protected that day. And it just seemed really strange that she said, oh, no, I will do him. So that made me look at it like, wow, we don't know what these people are putting in us, you know, especially when you just go to a free clinic. So that just made me think. I really thought about that. All right. So, Let me see.
Anybody else?
Yeah, Sister Aziza or Brother Mashinda.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rasha Key. Yeah, there's documentation on that. You know, biological warfare, you know, the brother Mukos talking about medical warfare. You know, that's, you know, part of the, you know, the, that's the goal in a lot of instances, you know. So, you know, the racism lies especially it's probably all over the world, but in this country, you talked about lacking insurance. A lot of people that don't have insurance, they're pretty much, they're not going to be treated like the folks that do have insurance, let alone, race classification. If you can have insurance and be black and be treated a certain way, you got to be an advocate for yourself, going into these clinics and things like that. I remember going into the clinic myself and going for a physical. Sometimes they tell you, hey, you don't have high blood pressure, but be times where eating certain foods in my life, I say, yeah, I need to chill out on that, that kind of thing. And I go into the clinic, they say, hey, you might need to bring what, hey doc, is there anything I need to do? He said, well, they got some good medications for high blood pressure. And I'm just making a point that, the medicine game, the prescription game, and the African Eastern and thoughts of medicine, the herbal medicines, the holistic viewpoints is not promoted in the Western world. It's a whole different point of view. So, but back to that insurance thing, I was remember relative really sick, and it's like they only had so much insurance. Insurance only goes so far. So they're treating cancer, and they're gonna go as far as your insurance will take it. Like you stay in the hospital. You'll be out of that hospital after a while. They'll be trying to push you out of there. They're looking at that bottom line. So, and black people, people of color, so forth. The African, that's in this country, that's, subjected to that. So it's imperative that we take care of ourselves to the best of our abilities, and so we can, avoid having to, get sick and rely on, those myth, that mystery, that's going on, because you don't know what you're getting. And there are some people that, try to do their best to try to keep you healthy and whole. But there's definitely an attack out there on people, as it relates to they they tend to say like black men are more prone to a higher blood pressure, that kind of thing. I'm sure everybody on the call has probably heard that, where you say, oh yeah, we're usually slightly elevated more than others, And they try to make it certain things that are innate, and who we are and all that, kind of like these race correction studies, like our lung capacities and our kidney filtration and all that kind of stuff. Brother Muko put that topic out, started doing a little reading, and it's pretty deep, So anyway, I'm gonna leave it alone right there. But yeah, I'm sure we've all experienced racism as it relates to our care. So anyway,
Sister Aziza.
yes, like Mashinda was saying, we all have experienced it, and unfortunately, I can say that I have. So it's just it goes back a long time ago, far as the Tuskegee Airmen giving them syphilis or whatever, and not giving them treatment. So I don't know when I became aware of the just the racism and discrimination and lack of care, and over medicating, our people with these drugs. But I don't know. It came to me a long, long, long time ago. I don't really have a date, but it's just sad. Even when I was delivering my son, my experience is personally, I've never been able to get care and medication for whatever it was that was going on in my life. But when I had my child, and you know, I had all these different coverages, and I was, you know, covered to have this stay and made plans to have him there, I know it was hard trying to get, you know, like a Tylenol. You know, I'm in pain, and I had, you know, had a surgery, so I know I couldn't even get, you know, pain medication. And like Machinda said, we have to advocate for ourselves, and I had to speak up and let them know, like, you know, if I'm telling you I'm hurting, like I have no other reason to even, you know, want any kind of, you know, pain or medicine, you know, after delivering. But yeah, I'm not going to be long-winded, but yeah, it's an interesting subject, and it goes back a long time ago. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Harriet A. Washington. She wrote that book, A Medical Apartheid. I discovered her probably like a decade ago or whatever. But, you know, it's just something that's food for thought.
Right. Brother Muko.
Absolutely. I know y'all seen me looking around like, because I got that book right here, you know, medical apartheid. So yes, I was definitely glad to hear all of y'all testimonies, and thank you for sharing, and thank you for being honest. You know, I think we have developed an issue, and when I say we, I don't mean the people in this space, of course, in this care unit, but others outside of our care unit, you know, and even us, maybe at times in the past, have an issue with being honest. You know what I'm saying? And one thing that I appreciate with most victims like myself, whether they see themselves as a victim or not, usually when they share my hue of color, they are honest. You know, I get a lot of dishonesty from almost every white person I've ever met. But I'll share my experience. I think the first time that I recognized racism in the medical field was maybe when I was about, and my mother would be, I wish she was sitting right here so she could say, yeah, that was age. I think it was maybe about 2 years old. And, it's probably sooner than that, but the time that I can vividly remember my mother taking me to the doctors and me seeing white people in white coats just freaked me out. And I was there to get vaccinated, actually. And man, I remember seeing that doctor coming to me with that needle and just the look in his eye. Now I was only two, but I can still remember that look in his eye. Like, yeah, I'm like, he was excited to stick me, and I just zapped out. And it took my mother, my father, and about five doctors to hold me down just to get a needle, you know. So the very second experience I remember was 11, when I had a car accident and this happened. I did not get the most constructive help when it came to my mouth. My aunt and I we were driving. Well, she was driving. I was in the back seat. I was about 10 years old. And someone slammed on the brakes in front of her. So she slammed on her brakes. My mouth went into the back of the headrest of a car, and from my canine teeth all the way into the middle, my gums were hanging out in my hand. And so that had to be sewed back in, and this is how they placed my teeth from 10 years old. 10 years old. A lot of people think, oh, you got a missing tooth. No, this is actually a gap. Okay? Now, I've been in the armed forces, military, 09, and what happened was, now I wanted to get my mouth fixed, and I was told by a dentist in South Carolina, we cannot do anything for you because your mouth is really not even finished healing. Now, I was 22, and I was like, huh? And he was like, yeah, you know, the mouth is, you know, it's like the most, you know, it takes the gums take the longest to heal. And this happened to you when you were 10 in your 11th year of life. Your gums are not going to be maybe fully healed until maybe close to your 30s. And I was like, that sounded weird as hell to me. So the second time that I experienced racism in the medical field was when I had that accident. And I noticed the braces that they put on my mouth. At that age, at 10 and 11, I realized that my braces did not look like my white classmates' braces, who had, you know, double wire with the rubber bands and, you know, making sure her shit was straight. But my shit just had one little single, you know, it was just looked real, real ghetto, you know. And I just remember thinking to myself at that young age, like, is my mouth going to be like this forever? And here we are today. I can go on and on, just like I know many of us can. But I wanted to share that because I wanted to kind of get a feel to see if everybody was clear on what racism, white supremacy is. And because this is being recorded also, that's another reason why I did this, because I have people that are definitely going to be listening to this recording. And this is a lot of valuable information. And I felt like that dialogue had to set the tone. So, to go on, I want to let everybody listen to a news clip about race correction. And the reason why we're going to jump into this so fast is because I've heard from your testimonies that I've heard, you know, I think it was Brother Hendrick that said something that was really, and even Brother Armin Ross said something that was really hit really close to home in this. And it was about someone or maybe one of their loved ones learning about a condition that they had, but they learned that they had this condition when it was like really outrageous, really messed up. And this race correction topic has a lot to do with that. And so we're gonna jump into the audio real quick. I'm gonna cue this up. It's already queued up, so I'm gonna let everybody hear this. So I'm gonna keep my audio on. And I want everybody to hear this. Hold on. Okay.
Medical apartheid, the dark history of medical experimentation on Black Americans from colonial times to the present. Scientists have long known that race is a social construct, not based in biology. And yet, for many years, common diagnostic health tests have been interpreted differently for Black patients. That practice is called race correction. Critics say the practice has systematically denied Black people access to timely and sometimes life-saving care. Lana James is co-chair of the Canada-U.S. Coalition to End Race Correction in Healthcare. Dr. Nav Prasad is Canada Research Chair in Health Justice and Staff Physician in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at St. Michael's Hospital at Unity Health Toronto. And they're both with me in studio. Good morning to you both.
Good to see you.
Good morning.
Lana James, just briefly, I suppose, and for a layperson, what is race correction and how does it operate in the context of diagnostic testing?
So race correction has two challenges. The first is it's about race, and we know race is not biological. It's a social construct. So this is where we get into trouble, because race correction is a mathematical calculation that's done to adjust for someone being Black. And so it's a mathematical calculation applied to your diagnostics. So if you get a blood result back, they do some multiplication or addition, and they say, oh, this is your range. So there's a separate category, diagnostic range for Black people than other people, for no scientific reason.
Let's talk about how this looks, doctor. And specifically with the test for kidney function, the EGFR test. This is something that many people have had, just part of a physical. Maybe you have it more regularly than that. Just explain what the test is and why somebody would get that test, basically.
Sure. If you have a routine blood test done to assess your kidney function, the report will indicate that the estimated kidney function should be adjusted for people of African descent. That's the term used in the report. So the ability of your kidneys to filter your blood cannot easily be measured directly. So instead, the creatinine is measured in your blood, and that gives an indirect measure of kidney function. And some older, antiquated, and not rooted in science approaches to estimating kidney function based on this blood test indicated that there was a difference based on whether you were Black or not. And so still today, if you open up a chart, it's going to have this mandatory advisory that you should adjust the kidney function. And the upshot of it is it makes the kidney function for Black people seem better than it is. And it can therefore adjust care and can deprive Black people of referrals or appropriate care, holding other factors the same.
I mean, it actually says this on the results you shared with us, with the names removed, a testing result. And it says, it on the paper, it says, for patients of African descent, and that's been circled, the reported EGFR must be multiplied by 1.15.
Exactly. There are different equations. Some say 1.15, some say 1.21. They all say must be multiplied, which is really unusual language, actually, in a lab report. And it's very concerning that it indicates that there is some sort of biological difference between Black people and other people. It has direct implications for patient care, and it also perpetuates biological racism, this idea that there are biological differences.
Where does this come from, Rana James? I mean, if there is no scientific basis for race corrections, where is this coming from?
This is a legacy of the transatlantic enslavement trade and the kidnapping of Africans into the Americas and then circulated globally.
What do you mean?
Well, in order to justify enslavement, one had to remove the humanity of Black people. And that was done expressly by, when we say plantation doctors, we don't just mean doctors that service people on plantations. We mean plantation owners who were physicians who were invested in justifying why Black people should be held in bondage. And so there was actually a hypothesis by American physicians that Africans of descent would die out once the institution of slavery was dissolved. So they spent a lot of time proving it. And unfortunately, 18th century medicine continues into the 21st century because they just created flawed studies to affirm what is categorically known as not true.
I guess I'm just still trying to understand why in 2023 this is still something that's applied to a test.
Well, as a person who's been Black my entire life, I asked that question since I was a kid. And this is the result of me asking that question, literally inquiring, why is this on my form? And, you know, I had to go all the way, and I've been in healthcare for a long time. And it's been here because a couple of facts. One, the institution of medicine has fundamentally struggled with racism from its inception. We have institutions in medicine, the American associations, there's two of them. One was predominantly white, and the other was Black because it wasn't allowed to be in there as part of the majority of physicians. We have it today. So racism is part of society. It is in the very roots of medicine in its founding. I encourage you to read the work of Harriet Washington, the medical apartheid, in here in Canada as well. And so it hasn't gone anywhere because it has to be removed. And that's why we have to have de-adoption. That's why the Canada-US Coalition to End Race Corruption exists, because without systematic de-adoption, which is the removal by definition of a clinical practice that is non-therapeutic, there's either a better one or it's known to cause harm, and race correction means all three, it needs to be removed. And it has to be done systematically because it was implemented systematically. And by the way, it's not just the kidneys, it's every organ system.
Dr. Prasad, I want to get to the implications of this, but how do you understand how this thing still is applied? And why is it still a thing?
I agree with Lena that there's an important historical context here. Dr. Rana Hogarth has written a book called Medicalizing Blackness. There's a section in that book called Yellow Fever's Black Bodies, where she talks about this incorrect belief in the late 1700s, early 1800s, that Black people had some sort of innate immunity to yellow fever. That involved them being exposed to yellow fever intentionally with dire health consequences. And there's a direct line between that type of thinking that was rooted in exploiting Black people It's connected to eugenics. And then more recently, there were these studies, cherry-picked studies, finding associations, for example, between these social constructs, race, and certain measures like creatinine. And then that was used as a reason to apply this correction today. But the fact that there are some studies showing an association doesn't mean that we should alter care and try to use this social construct. For example, even if there are associations between being in a motor vehicle collision and racialization, imagine if a mechanic said to you, we're going to decide whether or not to replace your brake pads based on your race, or we need to incorporate the race of the driver in how we service the car. It would be obvious that that was wrong, but medical exceptionalism means that this is still allowed to take place.
Have you ever used this?
I am embarrassed to say that I have quietly accepted this practice. I have just seen these mandatory advisories that I must be multiplying and ignored them. I haven't used them. I haven't actually applied those corrections when it comes to kidney function, but I haven't until now. And I'm glad that Lana and her colleagues are leading the charge to end race-based correction, because they shouldn't be quietly accepting them. In other cases, they can't be ignored though. So for example, in pulmonary function tests that are used to diagnose asthma and COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, the race-based correction is baked into the interpretation, so you must incorporate it. So it certainly has affected the care of my patients.
I was going to say, as a family physician, as somebody who is talking about this but also is practicing, what are the implications for your patients? What have you seen? What has this meant for their care if this equation is applied to those test results?
There are studies indicating that Black people are less likely to get access to treatments for conditions like asthma and COPD. Other studies indicating that large numbers of Black people would be delayed in their referral for additional care when it comes to impaired kidney function. So there are immediate and important implications.
Because the belief is that if they're Black, their kidneys function at a higher level, and so they don't need the care that others might need if that threshold were to be met.
Exactly.
What have you heard from patients? I know that your organization has helped support patients who have been caught up in this.
Yeah, and as somebody who has had a long history, and I've lived in Canada, born in Canada my entire life, I've seen what happens for myself and for other people is things that should be noting as a red flag, things to be inquired, they just don't happen, and they don't happen unless you as the patient often are the one who are advocating. But remember, race correction is something done without your informed consent.
So you would never know. I mean, I go for a test. What you hear back is what you hear back from the doctor. I'm not going to see this form, for example.
You can ask for it. You may see it if you do the electronic file, but do you know what that means? Many of us have just been led to believe that if it's on the lab form, then it makes sense and it's justified. Very few of us know we should be asking a question. And how I got here is I asked that question and I happened to get a bunch of degrees as well to make sure that I could get that question answered. But no, you wouldn't know.
What have you heard from people? What are the stories that you've heard from people about what this has meant to them?
It's a sense of devastation and a loss of trust, because many people, their doctors have delivered their children or helped other family members, but yet others who have tried to follow the instructions that they've been given and have failed by the loss of a life or a limb are left understanding. That's why it never added up. I asked every year, I went for my physical, and then they tell me I've got this advanced stage. How could that be? And it's because signposts get missed. And so people are often devastated. They often feel like, I always knew something was going on, but I could never put my finger on it. And unfortunately, they're right. But what it also means is that we're very committed to educating folks and their clinicians and making sure that they get the care that we need rather than it being delayed. But first, you have to know, and you have a right to informed consent. Doctors and clinicians do not have the right to make this decision on your behalf. And that is the safety net, informed consent.
How well understood, doctor, do you think the updated science, such as it is on race correction, is? How well is that understood by frontline physicians?
I think the assumption is that what you were taught in medical school still applies. So I think because many practicing doctors today were taught this when they were training, they believe that it is appropriate.
And it's a generally received wisdom.
Yeah. And I mean, you're receiving it. It's not just generally received wisdom. It's something you're receiving in your inbox and patient chart you're opening every single day. And so you assume that it must be appropriate. You assume that
You know, the nephrologists who support the use of this test must know what they're doing. So really, in addition to the direct impact on patient care, I think it helps to perpetuate racism within medicine and to healthcare providers.
Two of the big national private labs in this country, Life Labs and Dynacare, told us they are no longer reporting the race modifier. Life Labs said they stopped doing it on the 13th of February. Dynacare wouldn't give us a specific date, only that the change was made very recently. Does that resolve this problem that we are talking about?
If it's true that they're no longer going to apply these race-based corrections, then that's an important step forward. I think it's important to note that this never should have happened. It was not appropriate to do in the 1960s, the 1990s, and it definitely wasn't appropriate to be doing it in February or March of 2023. And so we need to understand exactly what have been the implications for patients, particularly Black patients, and then what affected patients should be offered to make sure they're insulated from any harms that might have accrued from delayed care. So it's good that it won't be happening going forward, but there's still this current issue. And then we do need to think more broadly about why it happened and what it means about medicine.
Go back to what you just said, with the affected patients and what they should be offered. So patients who might have been tested and this was applied to their tests and they didn't meet that threshold, and so they may not have received that call back from the doctor or the attention that comes. Where does that leave those patients?
Exactly. So it seems like these labs would like to quietly change the practice without acknowledging that if you're changing the equation for estimating kidney function, removing the race-based correction, there might be a discrepancy now. And so usually when a mistake is made in medicine, one of the first steps is notifying individual patients who might have been affected and then taking appropriate steps.
But you could imagine those patients could hear this and be concerned. They may have had the test. They don't know whether they met that threshold or not because this might have been applied to their test.
Sure. And so they should be appropriately informed and offered supports. And that's why I think it's great that there is a coalition like LANAS who are sort of leading this charge and providing thoughts about how these supports should happen.
LANA, for Black people who might be worried that the care that they received was affected by race correction, was shaped by race correction, what's the advice that you have for them?
My advice to them is to ask for their laboratory results when they go to their next appointment, ask for the corrected and uncorrected. That way, if the physician is not aware of the difference, they will be cued to look in the EMR. They're welcome to email us. You can go to endracecorrection.com. And if you subscribe in your subject line, just indicate you're a Black patient if you have any questions, and we'll try to direct and support you. There will be a patient portal coming online in the early summer so that we can actually field these questions in an appropriate manner, and it'll be available nationally in all time zones because the system isn't fairly prepared. We are working with, for instance, in Ontario, Dr. Chris Simpson of Ontario Health. But I do want to point out that it's not just in kidney function, right? It's in cognitive function. It's in cardiac function. It goes across the body. And so ask, get your test results so you at least have the information, and then ask if you could be reassessed.
But people, that's a lot to ask on people. It requires agency. There's any number of reasons why people may not be able to grab that wheel, if you know what I mean.
And that's why we'll have the portal coming online, because we know that, and we have to get the physicians ready as well, and the providers and the volunteers to be on the line. And we're training the physicians, so we have continuing medical education credits that'll be available. In the interim, we're offering these free talks at least once a month on each of the areas. And we have a full packet of information, and we'll be uploading all of those resources to the website, but they've been available to anyone who has subscribed. So it's on the physician and the clinician to change their behavior. But for the patient that can and wants to take the situation directly on, we can ask that question. Can you please share with me my lab results? You can ask it of Dynalabs or Life Labs, and you can ask if it's corrected or uncorrected. And if you can't do it by yourself, then definitely email us or join us in the portal.
What does this tell us? I mean, there's this idea, and it's been interrogated and unpacked for a long time now, that everybody gets equal care. We have a universal healthcare system, and that allows people, in the best case scenario, equitable care. And there are any number of reasons and examples from history that would question that and that would perhaps shine a light on some of the failures there. What does this story tell you about that? that racism exists in medicine and healthcare. I think sometimes people have trouble understanding exactly how racism would affect healthcare if most people have a health card and have access to a doctor, to the emergency room. This is an example of how racism is baked into the system. Even for clinicians who might have a critical view of racism, they probably were quietly accepting race-based.
You yourself, he says, you said you're embarrassed that you quietly accepted this.
I'm hugely embarrassed that I quietly accepted this. And I think it says a lot about big changes that are needed in medicine. We know that most clinical practice guidelines are made by white men. Panels that predominantly include white men and exclude racialized people, especially racialized women. And then we have these approaches like race-based corrections that are clearly racist and that include like racist nonsense and elevated to this scientific status. And we have to think about all of the structural reasons that it happened in the first place and that it was accepted and is being accepted in March of 2023.
Are you confident, just a minute or so left, are you confident that your colleagues are willing to interrogate that received wisdom, are willing to take this on and question that and ask what is true and what isn't true?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think after race-based correction is ended, the world is going to keep turning. The sun will come up the next day. And maybe people will have trouble accepting that initially. And then I think we need to end it and move on to address some bigger issues and think about some of the larger reasons that it was accepted and really challenge racism within medicine.
And is now, Lana, we're just about out of time, but is now the time to do that?
Now is definitely the time. We have champions in cardiology, anesthesiology, family medicine, nephrology, across almost every specialty and from coast to coast and soon to coast, all our partners. And so we encourage any hospital, clinic, or a teaching unit that has not already enrolled, that is opening. So subscribe, email, and join us, or you'll be getting an email or a letter from us. So I encourage people to ask those questions and go to endracecorrection.com to get their more information.
It's good to have you both here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lana James is co-chair of the Canada-US Coalition to End Race Correction in Healthcare. Dr. Nath Prasad is the Canada Research Chair in Health Justice, staff physician in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at St. Michael's Hospital in Unity Health, Toronto.
Okay, I know that was a lot, y'all. Now, I want to know, I'm going to ask a question. Actually, I have a ton of questions, but I want to know, is anyone still confused after hearing that?
No, I'm not personally.
Well, Brother Munko, we have a sister making it happen, and Dr. Charles is on. So you may want to address that first question to them to see if they experienced it.
Okay. Well, I'll take it back. My first question was, has anyone personally coming to the group, have you experienced racism in a medical field, either being done to you as a patient or you working in a medical field? Have you personally witnessed or had that happen to you?
Well, I'm going to jump right in.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and what's up, everyone. I hope all is well on your ends. So I am PTSD. I'm shocked by that, but then not really, because I am one of the founders of Black Men for Wellness. And that is because of the racism that we know exists, and no one's going to take care of us like us. So we must take care of us. And so this, you know, I was listening to Sister Jan. She was on. They had a clip, and I heard her using the word baked in. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing it again. I'm thinking, okay, so these are the terms now. And so, yeah, so I'm glad that this is out. I'm glad it's exposed, perhaps, you know, but it all comes back to, again, what we're doing in our homes and how we're caring for ourselves And because, you know, they are practicing, you must know thyself. We must know, you know, Imhotep, we must know thyself, you know, and there's some of the equipment we do need because you can't x-ray yourself. There's some things you may need, perhaps, I guess, from the system, but you must know thyself before you go in there. Otherwise, you know, I don't know. but yes, and yes, and yes, from giving birth three times to watching my own family. So, I'm just happy that we're at the age where we are, where the information is out there. But I come from the training where information is only powerful if it's utilized. So, you know, if there's many, many, many lots of information that just has dust on it, that's not being put into practice or utilized. So it's only useful if it's utilized. So thank you so much for listening to all of that. But you could hear my intensity is because it's like, but thank you. And I'm glad I hopped on. Thank you so much.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate it. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you for your honesty as well.
Dr. Charles?
Good evening, everyone. Yes, brother, I have been a victim, direct victim. I had torn lateral meniscus, and they had the science to repair it, but instead they decided to cut out all the cartilage, and that was that. And so, have no cartilage in my left knee.
Wow! Sorry that happened to you, brother. Sorry that happened to you. Wow. Well, how much of this news clip did y'all hear?
I've been on since the bottom of the hour, and I was somewhat familiar with this coming into it. So I didn't hear I didn't hear the very beginning of it, but I was familiar with the nature of the conversation.
Okay. Was it anyone else that joined that didn't share, that wanted to share?
Those were the only two.
Okay.
Came on.
With y'all two actually said, Sister Make It Happen, and what's that, Brother Charles, was that what? Y'all actually, you know, segueing perfectly into this conversation. I was asking, was anyone still confused? And I heard one say I wasn't. One said, no, I'm not confused. anyone else not confused?
Hey, I had a question on that for Claire. Okay. When they were talking about the testing and what they do different with Black people, they add something into the equation that throws it off, or is that what they were talking about?
I did ask, was anyone still confused? I am still confused, but from what I gather, that's what I gather from what I've read and from what I've heard. It's an equation that they actually multiply. They don't add it, they actually multiply it. And when you do this equation, And this is how I'm getting it in layman's term. It determines your treatment. It determines like the results of different tests of different organs, your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, your liver. It could be anything. You know, you could just go in there for a general checkup like everybody always urging us to do, right? Especially as Black men. Oh, you got to get your prostate checked at 40. You got to do this. You got to do that. And, we go and do these things because of these health professionals, right? And the whole time that we're doing this, these corrective actions that they are kind of like demanding that you do. I mean, shucks, they just, you know, you seen what they did with the jab, you know, get the jab or you out of a job. You know what I'm saying? When you think about stuff like this on that basis, and then see, I just, my brother just had his kidney removed, He went to the doctors for a swollen knee. And when he got to the doctors, it's just like that, Brother Hendrick explained earlier, and many others. He went to the hospital, and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, your kidney is really bad. Yeah, he had to get his whole kidney removed. So I'm like, wow. My second question is, the doctor that you heard that was so embarrassed because he practiced or because he, what was his exact words? He was embarrassed because he, you know, consented to it or knew it, but didn't say anything or didn't use it. I think they all should be jailed. I mean, people have died from this practice being done. He's clearly stated that it's racist. I mean, you got people, you know, getting time for slapping an Asian for you know, an anti-hate Asian hate crime bill. I mean, this is yet another crime that's been done. I mean, when you talk about across the board, there's no such thing as an empty space. We don't have time. There's nowhere Brother Kamugo can go and get a fresh cut of time for any one of y'all on this line. Nor can you do it for me. So we don't have time. Time has us. So for all this time that we've been here on this earth, I know I've been here 74. So from 74, even now to today, we're still getting this practice on us. He constantly says, well, it's up to the doctors that's, you know, they have to make a choice. Make a choice. How about jail time? I mean, that's one of, and I have many questions down here. I mean, because he said this is every organ. So this is even people, I mean, I suffer from PTSD. This is every organ. So you could have misdiagnosed me. I know you misdiagnosed me. I mean, but I think for the doctors that have been practicing this knowingly, all of them know this. I think it should just be jail time. You know, I mean, wipe them all out. Get some holistic doctors in here. Let's get a bunch of holistic doctors in here. Let's do it. Let's really do it different. You know, instead of managing pain, let's really cure pain. Because there ain't nothing but a bunch of pain management going around, a bunch of drug dealing. But, you know,
Sister making it happen got her hand up.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you. So yeah, that's like really bugging me out. So like your baseline is this number and they multiply it times 25 and then that's the number. And now you out of the water, you don't need whoop whoop, but you really did need whoop whoop. But now because they multiplied it, because whatever they mathematics or their sciences that you at this tolerance level or you can take the whatever, it reminds me of the Tuskegee experiment.
Come on, sis.
I'm just
come
like,
on. Come on, cook
that's
it.
Just what came to me right there.
Right, cook it. I mean, that's what it sounded like to me too, sis. That's what it sounded like to me too. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm listening, but yes, go ahead. Definitely cook, because you're absolutely, I think, I trust that you're right. You know, I trust that you're right. And me understanding what racism is, and I trust how everyone else on this line really has a clear understanding of what racism is and how it worked. He was even practicing racism on this line. I mean, even him saying, I mean, he was basically playing both sides of both sides of the argument. He said, I'm embarrassed that I even accepted this. That's what he said. I'm embarrassed that I accepted this and I didn't use it. Right there, that you playing both sides right there. You're embarrassed that you accepted, but you didn't use it. I say, I can't even believe that you didn't use it because you accepted it and you're embarrassed. You're embarrassed because you're scared because somebody is going, yeah.
Isn't silence, being silent is compliance?
I mean, yes, I think the dear late Martin Luther King Jr. said it this way. He said, betrayal at some point, I mean, silence becomes betrayal. And so, yeah, compliance, yeah, absolutely. You are not even, you are, yeah. You are accessory to this crime.
I'm turning your head. You see it going down, but you're just turning your head.
You guys, I have another question.
Yeah.
So is this as a result, this knowingness, this unveiling, this truth coming to light, is this as a result of finally being asked, why do we have to do this? Why do we have to add these extra numbers? I mean, like, how did this come to the table? Because there's a lot of us in the medical field and nobody asked, why are we doing this only for this group? Why is this equation only applied to this group?
That is an awesome question. And I know you see me with my pencil in my hand. That's because I wrote down your question because I didn't have that question. But it's an absolutely great question. And I just jotted it down. Because I'm compiling my list of questions like I'm hoping everybody else is doing. And I also wanted to introduce two phrases, two new terms, compensatory terms that I think will help us in our journey for repair, as far as dealing with this specific issue and others. But the two terms I think we can use interchangeably in every area of people activity. But I would love for us to keep cooking. I mean, if anyone else has any questions, and if you have more questions, bring them to the table, because I'm definitely jotting them down and I will share mine as we go along. But that's a good question. That is a good question.
I don't have, but I would like to chime in on something that one of the doctors said when he was referencing the biological difference between Black people and all others, which is a fact. And the reason they are confused about it, in my estimation, is they don't understand this melanated body that we have. You understand? Mm. Like our series of DNA, we're like, you know, three steps ahead of all other races that's been proven medically. And so I remember I had a cyst on my back about a couple of years ago, and I went to this white doctor. He was amazed how the shape I was in for my age. I'm 69 years old right now. And anyway, you know, they cut it and it was too deep, so they decide just to drain it. And my science buddy, which I talk to before I go to the doctor all the time, he gives me a list of questions to ask before I even go. He's a double major at Howard in chemistry and microbiology. So anyway, they cut it. I let him put the bandage on there, everything. And so when I went back a couple of weeks later, they were shocked how fast I healed. They like, man, say, first of all, we've never seen one that big. And when they cut it, the incision on my back was like, if you open your mouth wide, it was that big of an incision. But after 2 weeks, it was damn near closed. And they were like shocked. They like, And this is a white boy doctor that I had. And he was like, man, you are the talk of this hospital about how fast you healed up. But I know what it is in my mind. It's that melanin. And plus, I'm type O also, which most African-Americans are. If you don't know, you need to find out. That's royal blood. You're in a special category to most other people, and we ain't even hip to it. And also, I want to say, with our melanated bodies, we need to get out there in the in the Netheroo nature under that sun. The sun has healing powers for us that we ain't even aware of. We trying not to get dark by not being in the sun, which is totally away from us as African people. But like I say, a lot of us ain't even hip to it. And you know what? The leading product that's sold around the world amongst dark people is skin lightening cream. Check out, what's the guy used to play for the Chicago Cubs, the home run guy.
Sammy Sosa.
Yeah, he looked like Michael Jackson now. It is ridiculous how we're going for the okie doke on this. And the people we seeking the advice from, these European doctors, they're so, you know, they're so far behind in medicine. I remember during the so-called dark ages, they was drilling holes in people's heads to let out the evil spirits. You follow what I'm saying? And Imhotep back in 3000-some BC had already conducted 200-some medical operations on people. So, you know, we need to know our bodies. You need to know your body, number one. And anybody that goes to the doctor, if they're telling you something that you don't feel, don't question yourself. Go with your feeling. You know your body. That sucker don't know you. You know what I'm saying? And that's where we fall sometimes, listening to them. And I know for a fact that up until maybe 12 years ago, you could become a medical doctor without taking any class on nutrition whatsoever. They don't even know about nutrition. I know people been in the hospital fighting cancer, and you know, it's three things cancer eat off: red meat, you know, sugars and dairy products, and then they're serving the people that while they're in the hospital, which is ludicrous.
Right.
You gotta have some knowledge. You gotta do some research, and you got to, like was mentioned earlier, know thyself, which we don't know. So, we're getting caught up in some, I don't want to even go there on what we caught up in that keeps what we need to do, but I've made myself clear on many occasions on this show and others about what, the fried ice cream we just drank up the other day, last Sunday, but I'm going to leave it there and just move on. But bunnies don't lay no eggs, but I'm going to stop right there.
But anyway, I know what you mean, brother. I know what you mean, but
you got to seek knowledge and then take charge of your own body, your own mind, and don't let anyone tell you other than, and you got to get out there in nature and that sun with that activation, that melanin, the ancestors will let you know from the cosmos what you need to do. That feeling that you had that you call intuition, no, they're trying to tell you something. And right. So I'm going to cut it off right there because I done opened up another big old stuff there with what I just said. So anyway, somebody else, and thanks for the opportunity to speak.
Definitely, man. Definitely. It's a pleasure to hear everybody's take on it. And you're actually right. Everything in this Western medical paradigm is against nature. And that's actually, I'm glad you said that, what you said, because that was actually the next thing I was going to say. Us being more codified and becoming more codified by each day, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm always learning, just like Neely Fuller says, he's still learning. I say I'm always learning. I think, what was I about to mention? Oh yeah, right here. When we see something that's against nature, we should should trigger like your quote unquote spidey senses. You know what I'm saying? That's like a do tell when they're about to practice racism, especially when you're in a medical field. I say, I think I said in a couple times I was on last year, a couple times I said, your food is your medicine. And I still harp on that. We are not supposed to eat, you know, to taste good. So a lot of our foods, all our foods, matter of fact, is supposed to be our medicines. And Brother Hendrick said something really that was real valuable about meat, you know, and cancer. I was talking to a group of individuals last night, and we rolled into this topic because we were talking about medical warfare and race correction. And I was speaking about meat and the things that's contained, that the things that are in meat and the things that we're told by these, and now what I call them is medical race soldiers, that they tell us. And if we have any doctors on the line, please don't take offense to this. But I'm a firm, and this is just the court. This is just according to counter racist logic. I'm a firm truster in this. Just like the police, I don't trust that it's any good police. Even if you have one that says, well, I'm a good police, like say one of my family members. I always like to use this example. I have a family member that's a policeman. I don't trust him. And I tell him, he said, well, you don't think I'm a good cop? I said, no. I said, because if you was a good cop, you'll be locking up the bad ones. But the fact that you turn your nose, you're complicit, so you bad too. And he always said, oh, because, you know, you just can't be satisfied. Yeah, I guess I can, you know. So I don't trust that it's any good Western doctors, especially if you're not calling for the arrest of your colleagues that you see every day practice racism on you and people that look like you. And even if you turn a blind eye to act like you don't see it, this shit right here is proof that it exists and you're complicit in it just as well, you know, until, you know, it's over with. And that's just being honest. That's not me saying I hate you or I want to stab you with a knife or I want to crucify you. No, it's just being honest. It's just, you know, and that's something that when I'm being honest, I take my feelings out of it. So anytime that you see Brother Muko being honest about anything, which is 99% of the time, I try to be honest all the time. I don't have an attitude about it. It's just, it is what it is. The only way you're going to change it is if you be honest about it. If you act like it don't exist and you do like this doctor did, embarrassed that he accepted it but didn't use it. I think he was more embarrassed that he didn't use it. Not that he accepted it. I think he's more embarrassed that he didn't use it. You know, I always look at white supremacists and they tell you the truth all the time. I think we just fail to listen to it. So anybody else had any more questions? Because one more question that I had was nephrologists. I've heard of a lot of urologists, but a nephrologist, first thing I thought of was a nephew, nephrologist. What the hell is that? But I noticed that when these doctors get to talking, they give you buckets and buckets of words. Like they give you a bunch of words. And usually if you listen to them close enough, they'll actually tell on themselves. Like this white doctor was, I didn't even jot down his name, but I already recorded that. So I'm definitely going to go back because I think all these doctors that practice it still choose to practice it. I think the ones that change their mind and change their mind to not practice it now, I think they actually should be the first ones to get locked up. And then we should go after the ones that just choose not to, because the ones that actually made the choice to change, I think you know, and I always say this. I always say that I'm not smart. I don't know. When I always hear Gus T ask the question, who's more confused about racism, white supremacy? You know, non-white people or white people? I know that I'm more confused about racism, white supremacy than white people. You know what I'm saying? I try to always be honest. I'm not proud. It doesn't make me feel good to say that either. Even though I've got a pleasant look on my face when I'm saying this. That's just because I'm being honest. And I told you, I'm not emotional about that. You know what I'm saying? I know that they practiced this shit. They redefined it. They refined it over and over again. We got to start refining our shit, you know, as far as codification. And so I came up with this term, and it's something that I see all the time. I see white supremacy do this all the time. They use something called confusionary tactics. Now, I know for all my intelligent individuals in the room, y'all know confusionary is not a word that you will find in the dictionary. That's because I made this word up. Confusionary tactics is a tool that white supremacy uses, and it's a set of confusion tactics that they use. It could be, I mean, anything. You know, they have different types of confusion tactics that they use. I'll give you an example. We're trying to launch weapons to Mars, right? And I'll say, oh, look over there. Madonna, she's trafficking her daughter. You know what I'm saying? That's a confusionary tactic. Things like that. White supremacy does this a lot. When they get people, when white people or suspected white supremacists, they get to talking about topics such as, you know, race correction, or it could be race discrimination. It could be anti-hate crime bills. They always give you buckets and buckets of words, meaning they'll just run down a bunch of words, and the next thing you know, you don't know what you're talking about. That's a confusionary tactic. You know what I'm saying? That's another confusionary tactic that they use. So I want us to start. I don't want us to start. I suggest that we start recognizing and jotting down when we recognize confusionary tactics that white supremacy use, and share them in the space, share them with everybody. So you know, you can write them down and we can notice this shit better. The second term that I made up was distractionary weaknesses. Now, distractionary weaknesses are things that some of us just cannot help but to indulge in social media. That's a distractionary weakness. You know what I'm saying? Some of us just cannot, we just cannot resist learning about what celebrity is sleeping with another celebrity. You know what I'm saying? That's a distractionary weakness. I'm gonna tell you a major distractionary weakness. Football, basketball, soccer, hockey, golf, all these sports that Francis Cress Welsing definitely made a point of explaining in detail the racism in them, they are distractionary weaknesses. You know what I'm saying? In other words, Super Bowl won, fight white supremacy or watch the Super Bowl? Fight white supremacy or watch the Super Bowl? Well, you know where a lot, you know where that choice lies with many people. You know what I'm saying? You know what choice they make. Forget white supremacy. I want to watch football. You know what I'm saying? So that's a distractionary weakness. But distractionary weaknesses, we should try to avoid our distractionary weaknesses. And it's easy for me to say all this shit on this space, excuse my friends, for me to say all this stuff on this space. But I'm telling y'all, it's a thousand times harder to do this. Okay. So I don't want y'all to think I'm up here like, you know, preaching to everybody, y'all, you should do this, y'all should do this. No, this shit is easy for me to say. It's hard to do. It was even hard for me to do. It was hard for me not to watch the NFL for going on 10 years now. You know what I'm saying? It was hard for me to, at first when I did it, yeah, it was hard for me to get that up. But once I started to have it, I couldn't even tell you who went to the Super Bowl just last month. I don't even care. You know what I'm saying? Because after I found out how people suffer from concussions and went insane and, you know what I'm saying, blew their heads off, raping women, not even in their right mind frame. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Who would want to subject their child to that and call it a professional? That's crazy. That's just idiotic. And that's another thing, you know, that leads back to what I was saying about being honest. You know what I'm saying? So I know I've been rambling on for a minute. Anybody else got anything they want to share or another questions? Any more questions that they had from hearing this news clip? Because, you know, it was real alarming to me.
To let Dr. Charles chime in, he had sent me a couple of articles, some information. Go ahead, Dr. Okay. Charles.
If you Google or search race correction in medicine, there's plenty of articles that will pop up. You know, Harvard Med School, AMA, you know, plenty of sources. The Lancet, you know, all of these are you know, pretty good sources, and you know, and of course, one way you can determine the validity of the sources is the consistency in some of the information, but it all speaks to what we just heard in the presentation the brother just gave. And then another thing is that April is Minority Health Month by the U.S. Department of Health. And this year's theme is about health literacy. And that's kind of what we're talking about right now. And so it's estimated that only 14% of the U.S. population has proficient health literacy. And so, you know, to brother's point again, you know, doctors use a lot of different terms and words. You know, some of this stuff, you know, they use a lot of, you know, Greek and Latin, you know, suffixes and things of that nature. And you don't know what parts of the body and what organ systems are being dealt with. And so we really have to be thoughtful about that. Before, during, and after our doctor visits, because, you know, they can be talking to us and we have no idea what, you know, what they're saying. And, you know, like similarly in my field, I'm a clinical psychologist. I meet people all the time who aren't getting care because of they're on some long, lengthy wait list for a psychiatrist when they don't need medication, they need therapy. And so they're not talking to psychologists, counselors, or social workers because they don't know the difference between the various professionals in the mental health field. And so that's another example of the lack of health literacy. And so we really have to kind of dig in on these things because, again, as Brother Gibb referenced, the gentleman in the recording, he's a doctor and he can't fight this. So what is the layperson to do, you know, if we don't have adequate information on the front end?
Okay. Professor Ra, you have to unmute.
I'm gonna just stay on mute, but I'll always wait until people are finished because my, you know, touching this phone, it always look janky. But Brother Charles, you are dead on. And then I wanted to, and you know, just to add to what you're saying, any of those, because I did look up race correct. I'm telling you, the first time I heard this, the first thing I did, and I don't trust Google just as much as I don't trust Wikipedia, okay? Because it's who loads up Google's information, okay? The white supremacists. So I definitely use your method. I looked at all those articles and I seen what was similar. You know the similarity I seen in all those articles? Nobody talked about jail time. Not one of those damn articles. Now, they gave me buckets and buckets of words, though. Oh, yeah, it's wrong and it shouldn't have been done. And you know, people have died from this and you got the wrong, you know, and you go in to get this extreme reading after, you know, visits and visits of all these fine visits of and visits and you and they give you ice cream and they and you, but nobody talked about jail time. So to me, that's codification. You know, when you have a doctor such as this white male doctor who arrogantly said, yeah, I'm embarrassed that I accepted it, but I didn't use it. And then you got the black girl, the black doctor, and she's exposing this to us to help us. You know what I'm saying? But and I have to be honest again, because I'm not emotional. You know what I'm saying? Sweetheart, you're not talking about jail time for any of this. You know what I'm saying? You ain't even talking about jail time, even though you're schooling me. Thank you for schooling me, but if you ain't talking about jail time, if they ain't at the top of your list when you're giving me this information, you need to get locked up too. All y'all need to have some compensatory justice. That means going in the jail cell with them false-ass readings that y'all been giving us for these all these years. You know what I'm saying? And you go in the jail cell and you don't have no communication with nobody else. You just sit in the cell with them damn false ass readings. You've been giving all the dead people and you go back to all them people that died from your false readings, years and years of them, and you go apologize to them. It's not my responsibility. How you get there, you make it happen. That's compensatory justice.
Brother Muko.
Yeah.
They're not going to lock themselves up.
Absolutely not.
He can rest assured that they go, it's put out there now, but they're not locking themselves up because the people that did it, those are the ones that run things. But Professor Rye has something to say. Go ahead, Professor Rye.
Well, first of all, I want to say that, you know, most of them deal with the civil, with malpractices about civil suits. And, you know, it's a challenge. As far as that, then they pass laws on limitations of suing doctors, like a some of, as Brother Muka would say, a slick way of giving them qualified immunity and hospitals qualified immunity from lawsuits. And then by limiting how much you can get off of a lawsuit and malpractice and taking years and years. And then once you win a lawsuit, they can appeal it. And you won't get the money for another 4 or 5 years waiting on the appeal to be heard. And that's the way that go. But getting back to us as a people, you measure people health globally, a specific people, by their morbidity and their mortality. You know, I mean, how the various diseases and sicknesses they have and their death rate. From infant mortality to longevity. Yeah, you know, you have on the continent of Africa remedies in which people have longevity in life because they, you know, their natural environment, you know, they don't have hospitals, they don't have that, and they have people that practice holistic medicine. In this video of 5 days or 7 days of the Maasai, the sister performed an operation without anesthesia on gallstones and used a straw of a root thing to suck it out herself. And the guy got up and walked away. Whereas if you went to a Western hospital, you know, they don't charge you millions or hundreds of thousands and then keep you in the hospital to get that money also. Whereas this brother walked away and she stitched it up by putting some mud and dung on him and then some other stuff to heal up the so on. But let me just say this. You know, Malachi Andrews, who was a psychologist, also wrote a book, Black, the psychology book. I had it, but the psychoblackology. And he talked about the physiology. Nephrology is the study of physiology in kidney disease. That's what nephrology is about. I've been on dialysis for about 6-7 years. And most economic people in dialysis and in the diagnosis of kidney problems, they have stocks in those companies, DaVita and all that, even the doctors and the nurses, which should be banned. Most hospitals don't do dialysis. They contract with DaVita, Phoenicia, or some other independent person. And you can do dialysis at home. And it costs you more, and you got to do it every night, and things of this nature. But you know, there's different ways you do it at home. You can do it where you use the needle yourself, or you can do it with holes in your stomach, and you know, and they give you all kind of computer, and you turn your house into a hospital because it has to be super clean, and they send you all the medicine, and you know, one room is just dedicated to that. But anyway, let me just get to this. You know, when we start looking at racism, literacy, as Brother Charles was talking about, you know, from a global standpoint, we look at medical treatment from the standpoint of access, diagnosis, prognosis, treatment, and overall care. And those are the issues, the instruments that you look and engage a hospital as far as its evaluation of its effectiveness and its treatment. Hospitals close all the time. You know, they close, I mean, small hospitals close all the time. You know, and then you got specialists. So it's a challenge because some people, hospital operations and treatment, especially Black people, it saved their lives. Some people, they get a transplant and it was successful. You know, and you know, they were on the brink of death if they didn't get a transplant or some other form of treatment in the hospital. You have to be able to, as both Charles and you could study which hospital and which doctors, if you got the insurance or if you got the ways and means. Medical treatment is so expensive now, you know, it's ridiculous. Most Black people don't trust hospitals. They just don't because they don't trust America. You know what I mean? And they got good reason not to trust it. You understand? And those that do eventually go in is because they had no choice. They got so sick, they had to go in. And then, you know, people die in hospitals. I mean, you think you're going to a hospital, they're going to save you, but people die in hospitals. It's like going to a hospital and saying, why are all these people in here sick? I mean, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, it's a challenge. The only reason we have access is because we're in America and white people have it. And we broke the chains of their cultural apparatus that in the Holocaust of enslavement. Where we got too old to work, they poisoned us and killed us. And so we broke all of that out through struggle. And then to make the changes that Brother Muko is talking about, it's going to take a lot of education of our people so they can educate their children and free people around them and train them through practice of maintenance of their nutrition, maintenance and discipline of their nutrition, and of their physical development and mental development. That's a very serious thing. that you know, like you said, it's up to us. Everybody say, "Oh, it's up to us." It's just the making happen. That was saying, "Yeah, but we have to be prepared and think that way." Most of us, just now, kids eat whatever they want to eat and think whatever they want to think. What the hell is hip hop about?
Right.
You know? I mean, hip hop is a liberation tool. It's just something I can do what I want to do. I can say what I want to say. You understand? Just put some music to it and just start yelling, and I can dress the way I want to dress. You know, and I can criticize whoever I want to criticize, you know, and labelize. But the point is that we have to educate our people to the importance of health care. We have to bring health literacy to the home. We have to bring the science of health maintenance to the home and make it important.
Mm-hmm.
Important. You understand that when your kids leave, they practice what they learn at home. Right. You understand? Like Muslim kids don't eat pork because it's part of their culture apparatus. Now, you ain't going to stop racism in America because it's about white survival. It's Dr. Francis Gress Wilson said, not only biological survival, their lifestyle survival of dominance, deprivation, and devastation of the world and of the people of the world so that they can live. You understand? So my point to you is that, yeah, health is a challenge, and we get abused. Most people prepare you for further illness rather than cure you of the illness that you have. The side effects of going to a doctor sometimes is worse than the treatment, what they're treating you for. So our struggle is a continuous struggle. And we have to broaden the scope of what racism and our racial development as a people, even though most of us just see ourselves as human beings, as just regular people, in certain ways. And we are sensitized to the point that we don't look at what they're doing to our brothers and sisters in Africa with disease, with medical practices, those things, experimentation. You know, we lead the world in amputations. We lead the world in various forms of attainment of life, challenging illnesses. We're diabetic because we eat what they eat. Mm. And our bodies ain't supposed to have what they eat. I mean, because that's what Dr. Amos Wilson was talking about. Hey, we're different. You got to treat Black people as special. You understand? So my point is that this is a good show, good presentation. But, you know, like I said, raising your children to think health and on a diet and health is like our parents that used to stand behind us and say, "You're going to eat them vegetables."
Sure.
That's a long time ago. Long, 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 long time ago. You understand? I came up that way. You understand? You're going to eat that okra. You're going to eat this. You're going to eat these greens. You know, I don't want a hot dog. You're going to hot this. Pow! You understand? And so it's a different game now. We don't understand that. You know, eat your vegetables. That's what our parents used to say.
Okay.
Now eat your McDonald's. Eat your Wendy's. You know, freedom became the choice between Taco Bell and Pizzarella. That don't even make sense. But anyway, good presentation.
Professor Rob, yeah. Hey, my wife was like that when we was raising our kids. So it's still a tree. There's that tree still going on. But Brother DX came in and we headed into we're almost up 2 hours in here. But Brother DX showed up, so I want to make sure we get Brother in to say a few things about health. Go ahead, Brother Muko. Tell Brother DX like the gist of what you talked about so he can just make a comment when we get out of here, because it's almost time.
Okay, yeah, Brother DX, we were just talking about medical warfare and this thing that they have discovered, the doctors, this practice that doctors have been using, which is called race correction. And we were chopping it up. What it is race correction. They have been using a equation to determine your degree of blackness. And so what they've been finding out is they have been misdiagnosing a lot of people of African descent, basically everybody of African descent, through this equation that they use. And this equation that they use is not just for any particular organ, it's for all, you know, it across the board. Kidneys, your liver, your heart, your lungs, all. And so this the result of using this is, you know, you go to the doctors and you probably had a clean slate of, you know, going to the doctors and your checkups, but then you go to the doctors one day and you have an extreme case of, you know, your kidneys fucked up or something like that. And you know, you're looking like, well, how could that be if I've been going to these checkups year after year and everything's been okay? You know, so they don't catch stuff until it's at the extreme worst, or in most cases, possibly even death. You know, and so we listened to a pretty lengthy clip of a white doctor and a black female doctor. The black female doctor was like basically exposing it. And the white doctor basically was playing the, oh, I'm happy she's exposing it deal. I'm embarrassed that I accepted it before, but I never did it type thing. And I was just exposing or just sharing with the, you know, with the space, everybody, my opinions on his tone and how, I felt like he was practicing racism, white supremacy, and how that every article that I looked up about race correction, nobody talked about jail time to the doctors that are using this. But I heard a lot of, well, it's up to the doctors to change their practice type deal. I heard that it's a racist thing from a white doctor and this black doctor, and they got, you know, websites and stuff up that you can go to. So I was just getting everybody's opinion and you know, kind of going around the table, seeing, you know, everyone else's opinion and questions and jotting them down. And that was the gist of it.
Okay. All right, brother DX. Kind of faintly.
Yeah, I gotta connect, and then my connection is not the best.
See if you can take it off mute, Brother DX. Okay, we can't hear you.
Hear me now? As I say, my I'm in a bad little area.
Okay, we hear you good right now. Yeah.
Okay, man, I apologize for chiming in late, but my time on the East Coast be throwing me off a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes I'll be on my own time zone, I don't know. But I appreciate y'all still being online and me being able to hear this very, very, very deep topic. This is something probably, you know what I'm saying, that should have been addressed a long time ago with us as a people. Dealing with the doctors, you know what I mean? Knowing that they never really had our best interests at heart. Like, from day one, when the Europeans even came to this island, you know, they needed our help, you know what I'm saying? In order to get the herbs and things of the earth that were good for us, they're all still here, you know what I mean? There's no disease or anything that we can't get that can't be cured or fixed in the human body through use of some herb or some natural means of doing things. Well, we know that, you know, Big Pharma is what rule, you know what I mean, right now, and allowing people to be sick through the food industry. especially like America. I'm just gonna make it real brief. I know y'all been on the phone for a minute, and I just really appreciate y'all still being here. But the food industry itself in America is based on, you know, basic steak and potato diet. So like steak and potatoes is the staple for America. And if you can't afford steak and potatoes, then we have hamburgers and french fries. So we make that very convenient for everybody. You know what I mean? Which it has no nutritional value from day one. When you have McDonald's and all these other Burger Kings, everybody sells steak and potatoes or hamburgers and french fries. So it's a staple diet for a long time for our particular generation, especially. You know what I mean? So we went from, and probably, Ross had mentioned it earlier about hip hop. You know what I mean? I think hip hop plays a big part in the social construct of what we eat and what we do as well, because the hip hop generation, and why it's so vocal, don't want to listen to nobody. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a hip hop all day. Like, yeah, we are that. Like, we want to say what we want to say, we want to do what we want to do, because we're latchkey children. You know what I'm saying? We're the generation that came home and had to eat the McDonald's because our moms and dads was working, and they stopped the churches kicking on the way to the house because they pick us up from school or football practice or whatever. And those fast foods became a staple in our community. Very easy, because you had two working parents as opposed to grandma cooking, or when their moms cook, it was, you know what I'm saying, the sons and children coming home to a home-cooked meal, or, you know, grandma made lunch, you know what I'm saying, that you carried and took to school. I mean, it was leftovers or whatever, you know what I mean? And I've been vegan for probably about 30 years now. When I started, people talked about me. It was like, oh, you can't eat chicken, you're going to die, you're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. But I learned from the rosters, you know what I'm saying, like being Ital and not eating things with bloods and eyeballs. Just from the simple fact that even the Bible told us that the fruit be his meat. But, of course, you know, we'll even take that and flip it back and say, well, this food is good, this food is bad. And you know what I mean? You learn from other societies and other cultures that have certain diets. And like our diet became their diet. So that's the main reason why the diabetes, and they say it's genetic, but it's not. It's just families in the same house eating the same food. So I'm going to leave it with that. And, you know, like I say, it's a cure for everything. You know what I mean? We get back to the earth like we're supposed to. And really go back to Mother Nature, you know what I mean? And that's just that would be my comment on that. Like, you know, we ain't supposed to be trusting these doctors. We ain't supposed to. You know what to expect. You know what I'm saying? You gonna get mad because the scorpion bites you and you put them in your breast. Like, that's what the scorpion do. So that's it. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it, brother DX. Thanks for coming. All right, brother Muko, we're gonna take a pause, but before we take that pause, you get your last words in, and we're gonna do this again.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, that's big facts, brother DX. And everybody in the space. I mean, thank y'all for sharing and being honest. I will say this, everybody has the right idea. You know, we got to stick, you know, get back to nature, start eating. You know, if you have not been practicing eating your G-bombs is your greens, your beans, your onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds. Protein comes from your greens, not from your meat. So, yeah, definitely start paying attention to nature and, more importantly, paying attention to what nature doesn't do, okay? Reason why we all are made up of the very four elements that nature is. So with that, we should always be not just paying attention to nature, but mimicking nature, mimicking everything that nature does, but more importantly, mimicking everything that nature does not do. All right. So I'm definitely not going to be a stranger as long as I have been before. Thank y'all again for just dealing with my tackiness and the system of racism, white supremacy. You know, everything is the white supremacist's fault.
All right, brother Muko, man. Appreciate everything, man. So check this out, Professor Ron. We got somebody coming on the first. So who is that that's coming on the first? of next month.
I thought it was,
is his name Damien?
Damien Goodman.
Goodman, okay.
He's over Crenshaw subway that, you know, they tried to stop the train from going underground on Crenshaw, and they were trying to buy the mall, and they bought a bunch of property and helping Black people get in low income, trying to save the Merck Park and those things. So he'll be here talking about his organization and what they do. And they meet they're committed, and they've raised a lot of money. And it's one thing to talk about what a solution is. What I like about Damien and them, they're coming up with solutions. It's one thing to criticize what they're doing to us. It's another thing to come up with a strategy to combat it. And that's what we need, more of that. Like, you know, not just conversation, but work and productivity. You know, buying property and letting people live in it and things of that nature, renting it. You know, it's just a beautiful thing. All right.
All right. So next week on our show, we have a coworker of mine, Cookie, and she says that she's the young old lady. So I'm going to interview her. So we'll see what she's talking about. So we're going to take our pause, each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody right, have
excellent,
a good evening.
Excellent, Brother Muko.
Stay on, Brother Muko. Yeah.